High Five Casino is the top choice for social casino gaming that's free to play. With chances to win and redeem for real cash prizes, free spin rewards, and tons of exclusive games, you can experience more High Five moments than ever before. You're going to want to High Five everyone. The neighbors, the mailman, all your coworkers, of course your friends. Well, you get the point. Your High Five moment awaits at highfivecasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The Last Word on Today FM.
We're delighted Clive O'Neill, environmentalist and researcher in climate policy, is able to join us for The Last Word on the Environment this week. Clive, thank you for joining us. The first thing I want to talk to you about is your experience in going car-free in Ireland. Because I'd imagine immediately there would be people listening and saying, oh yeah, really, where does she live? Because if you don't live in urban Ireland, it is not possible to do that. So, where are you living?
I live in urban Ireland. I live in Waterford City. And prior to that, I lived in Kilkenny and before that in Dublin. So I have been an urban dweller. And that means for me, cycling and walking has always been part of my life. I cycled to school, I cycled to college, I cycled to work. And when I had small children, I drove a lot. That's quite normal. That's, you know, that's a feature of family life. But
so you're not anti-car?
No. Not at all. Not anti-car. Cars are very useful. And obviously, a lot of people rely on them, you know, to do very day-to-day basic things that I don't need a car for. I'm within walking distance of every shop and facility that I could want. But I cycle everywhere anyway. I enjoy cycling. And I made the decision to give up my car because, frankly, where I live in Waterford, the car was an inconvenience, not a convenience. It's difficult to get car parking. I live on a cul-de-sac and it was just really difficult to manoeuvre the car. Many people on my street don't have cars. So there's nothing particularly exciting or different or shocking about what I did, except that I actually had a car and gave it up. And that seems to be setting off a lot of debate. And people,
yeah, because I wonder how many people actually have a car, and if they were really to think about it, might say, I might be better off without it.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you can save money. Owning a car is expensive, and the AA, the last time they did an assessment, reckoned it cost about 10,000 euro a year to run a car, maintenance, payments, insurance, and all the rest of it, and fuel, of course. So I'm not paying any of that. I spent some of the proceeds of my car on an e-bike, so there is no hill in Waterford that I cannot get up without exerting myself too much. And that's a big part of it, you know, eliminating those little obstacles that put people off using a bicycle as the normal kind of default way of getting around. Hills, bad weather, all of that. They are completely brushed to one side for me, except when it's frosty or if I have to go a very long distance. But even with longer journeys, I use public transport. I bring my bike on the train regularly. I was in Dublin this week already. I'm going to Limerick and Dublin again at the weekend, all with the bike and the train. I work on the train. I listen to music. I read books. It's a very pleasant experience. And I wouldn't want to drive unless I absolutely have to. But there are journeys where I have to use a car.
You hire a car? Okay. And does that provide good value?
Well, they're expensive enough to hire by the hour or by the day. That is definitely true. And it's somebody pointed out as well that you do lose your no claims bonus. I had a no claims bonus that I'll be going back to the starting point again if I did decide to get a car. And I may well need to, you know, I don't know what the future is going to bring. So it may well be that I need to purchase a car. But for the moment, I'm absolutely delighted that I don't have these sunk costs, you know, and the hassle of maintaining a car. I am fortunate. I'm not saying that what works for me would work for everybody. Of course not. But there are people, for example, families with two cars and, you know, they've made the decision to downsize to one and purchase an e-cargo bike instead of the second car, or even just to downsize straight away to the one car. And so people are, you know, able to think these through for themselves. But one thing I will say is from my experience, talking to people who've bought e-cargo bikes that they use to transport their children and shopping and pets around and everything, they absolutely love them. E-bikes are a game changer, especially for the Irish climate and for the kind of hilly conditions we often have. And, you know, when you have that battery-assisted power in your pedals, there's no stopping us.
The one thing, though, that concerns a lot of people about cycling is safety. Do you feel safe on your bike?
I often feel unsafe, that is the truth, but I am also well used to cycling in urban environments. And, you know, people sometimes don't like the way cyclists behave on the road, but it's important to understand that intuitively it makes sense for us to cycle more defensively. That means taking up more space in the lane, and that's to ensure that we're visible. So instead of staying right over to the left, take up your lane, and that way the cars can actually see you. And secondly, at junctions, you just automatically move to the top of the traffic so that you're seen, because the visibility factor is the biggest hazard, especially when making maneuvers at junctions. So when cyclists are really visible in front of all the traffic, they're safer. And so that's why cyclists do what they do. But of course, our streets and our towns are designed for cars. There's very poor cycling infrastructure. And despite the fact that we have all these plans on the books, local authorities are very, very slow at rolling them out. And the reality is that a lot more people would cycle if the infrastructure was there and safer. And until we do that, people won't let their children get out on bikes, which is just tragic. I mean, I cycled all through my childhood in Dublin, and it's very sad that children don't have that kind of independence anymore. It's really sad, and they're losing out on so much more than just independence. They miss out on the risk-taking opportunities, the fresh air, the active lifestyles, all of it. And our streets have just been given over to cars, and we're going to have to change that because we're all paying the price for it. But I think our children are going to pay the biggest price.
Okay, let's talk about other things. I saw those reports today that there's going to be, or may already have taken place at this stage in the Wicklow Mountains, an exercise to assess Ireland's ability to deal with large forest fires. Why is that necessary?
Well, this is really interesting because, in fact, by the same token, there's a report that there's a huge forest fire, the biggest ever taking place in South Korea, and already about 27 lives have been lost. Now, the thing is that the Irish fires is that they don't tend to be caused by the same kind of climatic factors where you have drought, fuel, wind and heat all conspiring to get fires going and then spread them. According to the report, 100% of all the fires are started by people. Now, that's something to think about. When you see those fires and the smoke across the hillside, 100% are started by people, admittedly 50% of them by accident. So with a bit of care and attention, there's 50% that can be eliminated. And with a lot more enforcement and awareness, we could tackle the other 50%. But unfortunately, there's a misguided belief that the only way to deal with certain types of growth on the uplands is to kind of burn off the gorse and so on. And this is hugely damaging to biodiversity. And of course, once fires are lit, whether deliberately and in a particular area, it's very hard to contain them. And then they do terrible damage, like what happened in Killarney Natural Park in the last couple of years.
And talking of biodiversity, I see there's a report as well now that biodiversity loss in all species in every ecosystem is linked to humans. Linked to humans in what way?
Well, I suppose this should not come as any surprise, Matt. I mean, we have plenty of evidence for the kind of catastrophic decline in biodiversity, and we're not seeing anything that would suggest that it's improving dramatically anywhere. So this is a synthesis review of 2,000 papers, 2,000 studies that looked at 100,000 sites. So it's just a different kind of methodology to kind of see what's going on. And the researchers have identified five particular forces that are driving biodiversity loss. Habitat change, that's like converting forests or pasture to developed land, for example. Exploitation of resources, you know, mining, fishing, so on. Climate change, invasive species and pollution. So all of these things have one driver behind them, and that's human beings. It's human activities that are driving those, including the invasive species. And it's really quite depressing, to be honest. And, you know, everything that we've been talking about in relation to biodiversity and climate change has been in the context of a crisis that has been declared by all these international agencies and by our own government since 2019. But there's very little sign that it's been taken seriously as a crisis. And people don't seem to realise that once a species is extinct or once it reaches a tipping point of decline, there's very little that can be done. I mean, you can take certain species into zoos, but you can't take, you know, limestone pavement into a zoo. Like, there's so much conservation work that needs to be done in a way that's tailored to particular habitats and particular species. And then they need to be connected. They need to be allowed to connect to each other so that species can move to where they need to be. And you can have that kind of genetic diversity as well. So, you know, we know what we need to do, but it's not being done. And we need much more political will if we're going to address these things.
Yeah, you mentioned climate change. And to some people at this stage, the mere mention of climate change tends to get their backs up. So could it be that we need to concentrate more on persuading people to be against things like pollution, and that if we do that, then it becomes easier to persuade people to engage in measures that will combat climate change?
Yeah, but even that assumes that you need 100% of the public support behind these kind of things. And I actually think we need to intervene at a much higher level in the system, because only the state and its agencies, governments, can take the kind of decisions that are necessary to kind of ensure public safety and a coherent public policy. So, for example, we saw that in the pandemic. The decisions they made weren't necessarily universally popular. If everything had been put up for endless public debate at local level, we'd never have had the kind of lockdowns that were difficult, very, very, very difficult, but they were brought in to protect the public health. I'm not saying this is the same kind of measures that we need, but we need that same kind of thinking to, you know, what at the high level does the government need to do to coordinate the kind of actions that represent, far-reaching interventions in the energy system, in the land use system, across the board in every sector to ensure that we tackle climate change. And it's not to say that we override public opinion. That's really important. But I think that the public needs to see politicians and decision makers leading from the corporate level to the political level all across the board. And we're not seeing that leadership. We're not seeing enough of it.
So just before we finish, there's one thing I want to go back to, because the message is coming into 0874 100 102. One very practical question from a listener. Is it difficult to find safe parking for your bicycle in Waterford without getting your bike stolen?
Well, I'm happy to say, as I'm crossing my fingers, that Waterford doesn't have the same kind of problem with bike theft as, unfortunately, is the case in Dublin. I will say that in Dublin, there are more and more indoor kind of spaces for bicycles to park in car parks, which are more secure. Most people who cycle e-bikes have at least one, if not two or three locks that they use. And there are other features, you know, there's sort of various GPS tracking things you can add to the bikes as well. So they're quite high tech things in some ways. I do mind it very carefully. I'm conscious of the fact that it might be more attractive to a thief, but I'm sure there are people who've had bad experiences, but I've had no bad experiences with it so far.
Because I'm taken by, tell us a little bit about Utrecht in the Netherlands and about the bike parking facilities available in that city.
Well, it's absolutely amazing. They have the best cycling infrastructure in the world. Now, people often comment, well, you know, the Netherlands is very high density population, et cetera, et cetera. It's completely different to Ireland. But they actually did have a very car-centric culture up until the 1970s. And then the public just pushed back against the proposals to widen roads and facilitate cars. People demanded better cycling facilities. And then over time, not instantaneously, but over time, the facilities got better and better and better until cycling is now almost the default mode for most of the city's population. The studies that I saw said that 50% of the residents of Utrecht cycle every day. So it's the way people get to work, the way they get to school, the way they go shopping. It's how they get from A to B. And but at the train station, Utrecht, they have the largest underground bike storage facility, which accommodates 13,500 bikes. And I've been in it. It's absolutely extraordinary. I spent a week or so recently in the Netherlands with my daughters. I have two daughters studying there at the moment, in Leiden and in Amsterdam. And it was just a joy to be able to cycle on streets with other cyclists without the noise of traffic. The facilities are great. The cyclists amble along at a fairly slow speed, nothing wild. There's lots of e-bikes, lots of little scooters and various other things as well. So, you know, the same kind of trends are visible there as we see here. But the culture is different. We have a cycling culture, so people expect bicycles. People are very patient and accommodating of each other. So cyclists behave well, the pedestrians expect the cyclists, and it just is a joy to be there.
Thank you very much, Sive O'Neill, for being with us for The Last Word on the Environment. Surely there must be loads of buildings in Dublin and Cork and Galway and Limerick which could be converted into safe facilities to park your bike when you cycle into work or to go to the shops on a daily basis.
The Last Word on Today FM.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit highfivecasino.com. That's high, the number 5, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.